This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
there is just no justification whatsoever for any South African to go out of their way to attack people from other countries.
That's South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on attacks on foreign workers. Details coming up. Also, doctors in Zimbabwe say the country's worsening economic crisis has left them incapacitated. And the G7 group has called for an international conference on Libya. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. South Africa has been hit this week by rioting, looting, and protests against the employment of foreigners. Amid a growing death toll, highways have been blocked and patrol vehicles bombed. Human rights groups say widespread dissatisfaction with dire socio-economic conditions have made foreigners easy targets for public anger. The country is one of the most unequal in the world, with 10 million people unemployed and half the nation of almost 60 million living below the poverty line. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Police shoot rubber bullets at looters in Johannesburg. Social media messages inciting violence against foreign residents, insultingly referred to as makwere kwere, are going viral in South Africa, often accusing foreigners of crimes such as drug dealing and stealing local jobs. Police shoot at a mob plundering a liquor store owned by a foreign national. Nearby, a Zimbabwean man with blood on his face cowers against a wall, pleading for his life. In downtown Johannesburg, bricks shatter the windows of a car dealership owned by a Nigerian.
My company has like 10 staff. Among all these 10 staff, they are all South Africans. They are all South Africans. It's just me alone and my partner that is in Nigeria. We came to create jobs for them. We're not like stealing jobs from them because we are creating.
Lizette Lancaster of the Institute for Security Studies says violence is so normalized in South Africa that ordinary people commit horrific acts, often in response to high levels of crime and poverty. Lancaster says foreigners become scapegoats, but are not the only victims.
Many of the shops that have been looted are rented from South Africans. So the real victims here are not just migrants from other countries in Africa, but our own people. And we really need to start addressing the narratives about foreigners committing crime, as well as that they are taking businesses away, because it's not the truth. If we look at the research, we can see that.
But many in the crowds believe foreigners are depriving them. In the anger of the past days, there are reports of foreigners being doused with gasoline and set alight. The police rescued this truck driver from the same fate.
They wanted to burn me with a truck because they told I'm a foreigner. I told them I must check my license and see I'm not a foreigner. But they didn't believe that. They told me this company is only taking the foreigners. So I am the foreigner. They want to kill me because I'm taking their job.
Analysts say some officials have fueled the attacks by blaming illegal immigrants for the country's ills or saying nothing. After days of silence and pressure from several countries, most notably Nigeria, President Cyril Ramaphosa appeared on TV to condemn assaults on foreigners.
There is just no justification whatsoever for any South African to go out of their way to attack people from other countries. We need to deal with our own problems in a way where we sit down and discuss those issues with the various structures that we have.
But many bent on violence weren't watching TV, and the mayhem continued, albeit on a smaller scale. One man said, "The president and his friends want us to talk, but why? They only listen to fire and rocks." Inflation and unemployment have been rising, swelling the ranks of the poor. The latest economic figures show a ray of hope, with the economy growing 3.1% in the second quarter, following a revised 3.1% contraction in the first 3 months of the year. As police helicopters hover over the city, a Nigerian looting victim says South Africa's the richest country on the continent. Yet just like Nigeria, it can't seem to govern in a way that substantially decreases poverty. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Reaction to attacks on foreign workers in South Africa spilled over into other countries where governments worried about their nationals and protesters attacked South African-owned businesses. Botswana issued a travel advisory for South Africa and braced for the impact of the violence as fuel trucks are stuck in its neighbor. Truck drivers have been the target of some attacks, which have left at least 5 people dead and at least 289 arrested. The violence coincides with high unemployment in South Africa, with claims by some that foreigners are stealing the jobs of citizens. President Cyril Ramaphosa is hosting 15 African leaders at the World Economic Forum meeting in Cape Town and, as reported, has been forced to ease concerns by speaking out against the attacks. In Nigeria, there were attacks on stores operated by the South African supermarket chain ShopRite, the telecoms giant MTN, and other companies. In Zambia, about 1,000 students demonstrated today outside the South African embassy in Lusaka as President Edgar Lungu urged measures to prevent xenophobia from escalating into genocide. It's not the first outburst of attacks on foreigners in South Africa. In 2008, xenophobic violence left 62 dead, while in 2015, 7 people were killed in attacks in Johannesburg and Durban. In Zimbabwe, many people say the xenophobic attacks in neighboring South Africa serve to emphasize the economic woes at home. Zimbabweans reportedly have been among those attacked in the past few days in South Africa. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Anti-foreigner violence erupted last week in Pretoria after a Nigerian drug trafficker allegedly killed a taxi driver. The attacks have spread to Johannesburg, and at least 5 people, most of them South Africans, have died. People in Zimbabwe are watching closely. For years, Zimbabweans have moved to South Africa in search of greener pastures as the economy here all but collapsed because of mismanagement. Residents of Bulawayo say the attacks in South Africa put a spotlight on the economic crisis at home, which forces Zimbabweans to migrate. The surrounding region has experienced some of the worst out-migration, with communities of Cholocho, Plumtree and Gwanda being among the biggest sources for migrants to South Africa. Sihle Moyo is a 25-year-old university graduate and vendor.
Just because here in Zimbabwe, we have nothing. There are no factories, there are no shops, things, they are expensive. As we don't have our own currency, things keep on rising, the prices, they escalate day by day. We don't have a common source that we say we can get money. As youths, we are graduates, we have learned, but we don't have jobs. But if you go there to South Africa, you can be even a housemate and you can get something. Just because if I'm trying to find a living there, they are attacking me. Say I'm taking their jobs.
The estimates of how many Zimbabweans live in South Africa vary from a few 100,000 to 2 million. The South African census in 2011 showed 5.5 million foreigners in the country legally, and that number is thought to have grown since. Political and social analysts say South Africa's latest violence is a symptom of its own deep economic problems. More than half the South African population lives in poverty, and the unemployment rate is nearly 30%. Even so, Zimbabweans flock across the border, some to buy goods for resale at home, and some to try eking out an existence in South Africa. Many say they have no choice, particularly as inflation has soared, cash shortages have increased, and the country struggles to import the goods it needs, such as grain, medicines, and machinery. Samuel says Zimbabwe's government needs to stop its piecemeal approach to solving the country's economic woes.
Now, they say they brought buses. Prices are escalating. They brought buses. Buses cost 50 cents. But what use is it to go and bought a bus of 50 cents while I'm buying a 2 kg of sugar of $28? I've served nothing. It's just they are trying to kill our minds as people. But as youth, we are trying to raise our minds and see. And we don't know how we can stop it. Just because when we say we want to demonstrate, we don't want to cause violence, we are being beaten out there. We don't have our freedom. We don't have a say, actually. We are just suffering. But we really need something to change in Zimbabwe.
The opposition MDC Alliance says Zimbabwe needs a transitional national authority to end the gridlock and economic decline. Daniel Molokela, the MDC spokesperson, says the ZANU-PF party, which has controlled the government for 4 years, has failed.
The biggest issue that is affecting our economy today is lack of vision and leadership, as shown by the rampant corruption, the command agriculture, billions of dollars stolen in broad daylight. And now Zimbabwe is isolated even from the Commonwealth. So, as the way forward, the MDC is clear. We are saying we need to come together as a country. Come now. And that is the second step, to say we need an all-inclusive approach. Because when we agree that everything is messed up, when we agree the reality that ZANU-PF under this current state is not capable of coming up with any solution to the country, we need to open up the space.
Any such change at home is not likely to happen quickly, as the Zimbabwe government has arrested scores of critics in recent weeks for planning demonstrations. That leaves ordinary Zimbabweans worried about the safety of their loved ones in South Africa and about the remittances they rely on. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo.
16 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Doctors in Zimbabwe say they aren't on strike, but they aren't working either. They are saying they need a raise urgently because the country's worsening economic crisis has left them incapacitated. Health workers are determined to make government listen to their plight. Reporter Kuzai Zanwashi has the report.
Peter Magombeyi is the president of the Zimbabwe Hospitals Doctors Association. He says doctors are genuinely unable to continue with their duties.
They are not on strike. They are incapacitated. They didn't report to work today until indefinite periods. We're simply saying our remunerations are not enough and we simply don't have the means to keep on reporting to work. We are kindly asking the employer or the government to review our salaries according to the prevailing interbank rate.
He adds that government, as their employer, is yet to explain or make its position known regarding their incapacitation. The move by the doctors comes just days after government and health workers, which include doctors, agreed to a salary increase ranging between 50 and 60% that was negotiated by the Apex Public Service Workers Group. But doctors say it is not enough.
Doctors didn't agree with that. They had to let the Apex sign the collective bargain agreement, but we later on alluded that we are still incapacitated. That's why I am comfortable to use the word incapacitation other than strike. Our living conditions are becoming a health hazard and a mental depression to both us, the doctors, and the patients.
The cost of living in Zimbabwe has dramatically increased in recent months. The value of the currency has been eroded and prices of basic goods and services have increased by over 300%, which is why workers say the offer by government is not enough. The government has even stopped releasing regular economic figures. Panganai Chivesi is one of the leaders who have been representing health workers in the negotiations with government. He agrees with Magombeyi that the offer by their employer falls short by a huge margin.
We said it and it's documented actually to say, take note that government has given 50%, which will not go a long way in taking workers out of incapacitation. We remain incapacitated. The school fees, everything else has gone up by about 500%. So the truth of the matter is, honestly, there is need to seriously look at the situation for civil servants, because like now they are operating at a slave level.
Chivesa says doctors are out completely and other health workers will be reporting for duty 3 days in a week. some doctors and leaders involved in earlier negotiations were receiving death threats suggesting they should agree to the government's salary offer. Government is working on a legislation that will soon make strikes by nurses and doctors illegal in its bid to permanently stop health sector stairways. In the meantime, ordinary Zimbabweans who rely on public hospitals for medical attention are caught in the middle. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
With the battle for Tripoli stalemating, the G7 group has called for an international conference on Libya. Diplomatic sources reported international steps are being taken behind the scenes to organize an international conference that brings all conflicting Libyan parties together under UN sponsorship to reach a political settlement and exclude the military option. Several international sides recently expressed support for resolving the political complications of the crisis and rejecting any military solution. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi spoke with Jason Pack, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute and author of Kingdom of Militias, Libya's Second War, on prospects of a negotiated settlement.
This is only the most recent iteration in years and years of UN peace mediating efforts, of course, none of which have prevented the conflict. There's a new UN three-step plan proposed by Ghassan Salameh, the UN special envoy, which started with a calls for a truce during the Eid holiday, which just passed, then an international conference, and then a follow-up towards a political solution or compromise. I'm not particularly optimistic because the main international players who say that they support this conference and the peace process are actually, in a proxy way, supporting different actors with arms and encouragement. So with the international community divided, it's very difficult for the UN, which doesn't have tools or money on its own, to create a way forward.
But several international sides had recently expressed support for resolving the political complications of the crisis, rejecting the military solution and its impact. Could there be a future international unity required to push for such an ambitious goal?
It is an encouraging step that the new U.S. ambassador and the head of AFRICOM, who was recently appointed, met the Libyan prime minister last week in Tunis, discussed collaboration and counterterrorism. So that gives a positive impression that the U.S. is engaging, but it masks the fact that the Trump administration is deeply conflicted between some members of the administration who have had dalliances with the idea of supporting Haftar, and then the official State Department position, as well as DOD, of course, to back the UN recognized government and work on counterterror. So, yes, there are various motions, and at the G7, Libya was discussed. But to undermine those efforts, because Russia was not invited to the G7, General Haftar made a very symbolic visit to Moscow. And to do that during the G7 meetings in Biarritz was to show an alignment between those who are excluded from the top Western table and ways in which they can undermine the agenda of the Western powers. And the fact is, without Russia and the UAE and even Egypt supporting the international efforts, it doesn't matter what is said in public, those efforts will fail.
Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry has reiterated Egypt's unshakable stance towards the political settlement of the Libyan crisis. And during a meeting with UN Special Envoy to Libya, Ghassan Salameh, Shoukry stressed that the political settlement is necessary to maintain Libya's security and stability, as well as restoring the role of Libyan state institutions and fighting all forms of terrorism. What's your take on the Egyptian position?
Well, those statements by Shoukry illustrate exactly what I was saying. In public, not only the Egyptians, but also the Emiratis and the Russians will always say, we support the UN plan, we support a political and not a military solution. Meanwhile, they are giving drones into the country, helping for the transfer of arms, and many of the players are playing a double game. I'm not saying Egypt is the most guilty one. The French have done the same of playing a double game of supporting the UN position while tacitly backing Haftar and allowing for arms to flow to him. The Egyptians, I have a lot of empathy with their position. They're struggling in Sinai, where jihadi actors control part of their territory. They can't have a huge western desert where there is chaos and attacks would flow into their country. So Of course they want to see security, and they work with whatever actors can produce stability. And the Libyan National Army and General Haftar has created more stability on their western border. So their position is a complicated one because they have real security threat. That said, you cannot get to a solution when the Turkish position is the exact opposite of the Egyptian one, that they are working with the Tripoli government and introducing arms and drones and training, making the country more of a proxy war. For things to resolve themselves, it is good for an international conference and the second step of the UN plan to come about. But if there was to be a breakthrough, major powers like the U.S., the U.K., Italy, France, Russia would have to abandon their previous pettiness and actually invest political capital.
That was Jason Peck, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shinawi. Pope Francis is expected to be greeted by tens of thousands of Mozambicans today as he begins his first visit to the southern African country. The pontiff says he brings a message of peace to the nation, which has endured decades of civil war and conflict. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Maputo.
Peace is the pontiff's main message as he embarks on his three-nation Africa tour, starting in Mozambique's capital, Maputo. In a recorded message ahead of his arrival, Pope Francis addressed Mozambicans in the nation's dominant language, Portuguese.
Estáis todos na minha oração. Assim eu pelo momento de vos encontrar.
I cannot wait to meet you, he says. You are all in my prayers. I invite you all to join in my prayer that the God and Father of all may bring about fraternal reconciliation in Mozambique and throughout Africa, which is the only hope for a solid and lasting peace. It's a powerful message, Mozambicans say, especially in the wake of a recent peace agreement that aimed to bring an end to decades of violence that followed a brutal 16-year civil war. However, cracks are beginning to appear in the fragile deal, with members of the opposition Renamo Party accusing members of the ruling Frelimo Party of attacking their members in rural Mozambique. The two parties were the main combatants in the civil war. On his three-day visit, the Pope will meet with lawmakers, youth, and clergy. Father Giorgio Ferretti, parish priest of the Cathedral of Maputo, says he also expects the pontiff to address other major challenges that Mozambique faces.
We know he will talk about poor people, he will talk about environment, he will talk about peace, he will talk about universal fraternity. But not in a simple way, with his own spiritual words. And that is what we are looking for and waiting for to hear.
In the sunny seaside capital, things appeared characteristically relaxed hours ahead of the Pope's landing. After Mozambique, he will continue to the island nations of Madagascar and Mauritius. The Pope also sent video messages to them. He spoke in Italian to Mauritians who speak English, French, Creole, and Hindi, and to the Malagasy people who speak French and Malagasy. That's because, he said, the language of the gospel is love. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Stand up!